Welcome to Gen Tech, show 34. Today we have a special guest with us, Dan Schmidt from KidCast, and I ran across his podcast, it's been several weeks ago now, and I've been listening intently because I was really intrigued with the kind of practical yet thoughtful approach to incorporating podcasting in the classroom, and shot Dan an email, and even though he's on the road doing speaking engagements all the time, he quickly got back with me, and so here we are. Welcome, Dan. Really glad
thank
we could join us today.
Well, thank you. It's one of those surreal moments when you realize, wow, someone's really listening to this.
We really don't have it. We just make up people that listen.
Well, it's not all the secrets.
Quick, I realize I just blew our quick intros here. I'm Mark Hofer from the College of William & Mary, and along with Dan, we have...
Go ahead, Michael.
Michael Kelly from the University of Virginia by way of Billingsburg.
And this is Steve Whitaker at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville.
You can see why I'm usually not allowed to get the show rolling or get things started. I don't have mad skills when it comes to getting things rolling, I guess.
So. I thought
it sounds like an authentic conversation, though.
That's
a really nice way to say we're just really rotten at this.
Well, yeah.
You guys seem kind of grounded in what you're doing.
Dig you up.
Well, Dan, we've been really looking forward to having you on the show. I have ordered your book. I don't have it yet, so we'll give you a good plug for that. But I've just really been enjoying listening to the podcast and the tone and the kinds of ideas you explore, along with a lot of your practical kind of reviews of different software tools and things like that out there. So just wondering if you could just give us a little bit about kind of who you are and why you're doing this and how you came to do the KidCast podcast, and just give us a little insight into who you
are. Sure. All right. Well, I'm Dan Schmidt, and I actually work in the College of Education and Human Sciences at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. We were just talking about on the frozen tundra of Lincoln this morning, and it's crisp 7 degrees this morning. And so my work here, I work with pre-service teachers, and I work with faculty on sort of the intersection of technology and learning in a lot of different ways. And when podcasting sort of popped up on the radar, it was December of 2004, 2005, I don't know, some long time ago. It struck me that, wow, this could be an interesting new publishing space for faculty and for students, and I do a lot of work with K-12, so I thought, wow, how could we position this for kids as a new way to talk about what they know and how they see the world. And as I talked to more teachers about it, it just struck me this could be really big, just because it sort of brings the it makes learning a little bit more conversational. And students actually have to articulate what they know in, I think, a kind of a meaningful way. And it brings this sort of honor back to the voice. And so many interesting discussions happen in classrooms that sort of evaporate. Mm. And when kids produce things like this, I mean, and this is, of course, true with digital movies and some types of multimedia as well. But you have this really wonderful, authentic assessment of what they know in terms of content, I guess, when it's done the right way. So I've been really excited about this for a little while, and my show is basically just a kind of a discussion of where I see those intersections of learning and podcasting, and kind of shining a light on good examples that I've seen people produce. And tools that seem to make this a little bit easier for people to jump in and get started with.
Dan, I wonder if just from a technical point of view first, you could talk a little bit about some of your first forays into trying podcasting. I'm guessing when you got started, you weren't using the same tools or techniques that you've settled on now.
In some cases, yes. I mean, I started using GarageBand in the beginning. Of course, back then, GarageBand didn't have any specific podcasting tools, but for me it was a nice environment to work in. So I've used GarageBand pretty much Most of the time, I've tried out a few other things. I use Ubercaster once in a while, and that's more of a live production interface where you kind of line up all of the music and sounds that you might use in a podcast, and then you just trigger them live instead of adding them in post-production. And that's kind of fun too, but yeah, you really have to have your ducks in a row, and I don't always.
Yeah, I think that eliminates that for our consideration on Gentech.
I'm scratching that off.
but it's a good tool, and there are some things like it on the Windows side of things. You know, of course, it seems like Skype and iChat and even the Gizmo project; those kinds of things have evolved pretty rapidly, I think, because of the applications for podcasting. And it's so exciting to have. I mean, isn't it amazing? Sometimes you just sort of pinch yourself and look on your screen and go, wow, I'm having a chat with four. There are four of us and we're all having a talk. I mean, and it's not that different than a phone call, but we're capturing it and sharing it. And this thing is going to have a life.
Right.
Beyond this conversation. And, you know, like, I have to say, when you said you started listening to a couple weeks ago, and so I think, gosh, so he might be listening to things from a year ago.
Right. And yeah, so that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, so you think about how your words have staying power now that, you know, so much of what we say just sort of evaporates. And so that to me is one of the coolest things about podcasting is the staying power, the kind of long view that your ideas can have.
And that's to me, it's more revelatory than when you think about print having that kind of staying power, because these conversations are just usually so ethereal.
Yeah.
But to know that they're, like you're saying, they've been preserved and people, you know, just the idea that other people will hear them.
And I go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just that's important to remember, especially as it seems like this is growing so much, and some days it's just sort of lost in the blogosphere, so to speak. But it's not really. It is archived, and people do come across it, and it is there, and that's a good thing, as you said. Go ahead.
And I think, you know, if you take it to the other side of the learning spectrum, if you look at what students are doing with this, the fact that they're creating things in a sequence, to me, is one of the most significant things about podcasting and education. You know, so much of the time our students do an academic exercise and they sort of jump through the hoop, complete it, and here it is, even if it's a podcast or whatever, and they put it up. But the things that are really jumping out to me are those shows where students kind of have an inquiry question and they do more than one episode about it.
Yeah.
So they take this long view of research that's kind of what we want them to have in the real world, is to be able to explore something from a lot of different facets over time, instead of just, well, here's what I found out about dinosaurs on this one given day, and here it is.
I think that's such a great point, because, you know, when I talk to people about podcasting, you know, they immediately think of like sort of kids creating a single show, or, you know, each group creating one show that's all sort of uploaded at one time. And I think that really misses out on a lot of the power of the sort of serial nature of what a podcast can be. And to me, that's the thing that makes it most compelling, most interesting. I love watching people's thinking change, you know, listening to their podcasts or, you know, kind of new directions they're going. And to me, that's a lot more interesting than reading a single blog post or listening to a single podcast episode. And I think if we could translate that into learning experiences for kids, all the better.
On that note, Dan, I wonder how you might respond to teachers who hear you say that and who aren't sure they're going to be able to take podcasting as something that they can do long term in their classrooms.
Yeah, I think you're right. I hear that concern all the time, and sustainability, I think, is probably much more of a challenge than any of the technical stuff. So my advice to people is always, you know, you have to carve out time to do this and make it part of what you do, and dovetail it with particularly your if it's an elementary classroom where things tend to be dovetailed a little bit anyway, try to integrate it with your writing and your language arts exercises. I have a friend who teaches fourth grade, and everything they do in class in terms of writing is almost everything, once they get done with state assessments, goes toward feeding their podcast. And so, you know, I think that's really helped sustain them because they always have content being created instead of, okay, now we're done with our work. Now we're going to go work on our podcast.
So, I mean, in some ways, it sounds like you're saying that podcast becomes almost a core that you build around.
I think maybe it's maybe the core sharing mechanism. Mm. And I think the other thing is that they have to think small and sustainable. Sometimes we start with these. We want to make a big splash, and we want to make this a big thing. So people think in terms of half hour or 60-minute shows, and really producing over time, even short shows that are 2 minutes or 5 minutes long may have a little bit more of punch to it, because there are a lot of people that prefer to subscribe to those short shows, and they're easier to produce. And I think that kids will start to see that long view more if they can produce more often and even in shorter bites. I was trying to think if I had any other. Oh, the other thing I would say is also partner up. Teachers, so much of the time, they're these little islands of innovation where they're trying to do this all by themselves. And so, you know, partnering with instructional technology people in your district or with media specialists in the library is a great strategy, particularly because the media specialists have a nice quiet place to record that you may want to take advantage of.
Sure.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, because that's sort of the concerns I always get with teachers, and that's a real legitimate concern, just finding that quiet spot and finding a place to, you know, because, you know, the schools aren't, you know, quiet places generally. Right. So that's a funny thing you say. It's a good practical rationale for pairing up there. But I do think that's a great idea, and, you know, for I think it's always more difficult in a high school, but, you know, for an elementary school or middle school where it's maybe more of a team-based approach, to be able to hook up with other classroom teachers to work on these projects, I think is really helpful as well.
Right. And I think it's also important to, when they start, a lot of times it's good to start from a curricular point of view. I don't want to minimize that. But I think the place I tell teachers to begin from is finding an audience first. You know, thinking about a real, who is that person that's going to hit subscribe? Like, what's the problem that you're solving for them? What's the need that you're delivering on? That and so if they start there, then students and teachers have a sense of purpose to mm-hmm. their work, and still very academic, but you know that you're solving someone's need, and the likelihood that you're going to find subscribers, I think is a little bit greater.
It's almost an instructional design approach that you're talking about, where you're looking at this client that you've got, or an audience that you've got, and you're thinking about what it is that you might be able to address for them. And gearing the work towards that. It seems like that gives it a pretty nice focus at the beginning, too.
Sure. So what are you guys seeing a lot of teachers jumping in your area?
Well, I think Mark's probably most in touch with K-12 teachers.
Yeah, I think I see a lot of interest here. And I see people sort of dipping the toes in the water. I mean, there's a school in Northern Virginia that I have had on my list for about 6 months now to try to make an appointment to go visit, James River Elementary School, or I'm sorry, Jamestown Elementary School. And they've really incorporated podcasting school-wide, and they do really some phenomenal, really creative things. So we'll add the link to the show notes there. But, you know, locally, I think it's been more people trying it out. And I think there's I'm working with a colleague, Kathy Swan at University of Kentucky, and she's got some high school groups lined up. We're trying to develop some opportunities around creating podcasts for econ classrooms. So, you know, one of the first questions that we hear a lot from teachers that are really seriously thinking about kind of committing is, well, what do we do about the privacy stuff? You know, our district has a policy, you know, that prohibits us from making anything publicly available. Can we put it behind a password? So there's a lot of those sort of fearful logistical concerns, I think, that we're still trying to kind of – the teachers that really are committed to the idea, that's one kind of hurdle that we're seeing. So we're trying to, you know, develop some release forms, you know, and negotiating with the districts and all that. But that's, you know, I think people are just – you know, I have a lot of concerns around privacy and putting students' work out on the web and all that. So that's, you know, I don't know if that's just a local issue here or if that's a wider issue across the country or whatever, but that's definitely something that we're kind of running up against.
Yeah, and podcasting is this new kind of thing. It's a totally different animal, I think, than what a lot of IT directors or curriculum specialists have dealt with before. And the privacy thing is huge. One of the things that we do is suggest that students don't use their real name ever. That they make up a radio name, you know, like Dr. Johnny Fever or whatever.
Nice WKRP reference there, too.
I like that. Yeah,
exactly.
If you've ever those are, that one, Dan.
those are totally lost on my students. I actually mentioned that, and I felt so old the other day because not a single one of my students knew who Dr. Johnny Fever was.
It hurts. Yeah.
But that's one thing that they can do. But students, because they're producing over time, they have to really be thinking about this, like giving fairly innocuous information a little bit at a time. Someone could chain that together and find out quite a bit about you.
Right.
I mean, I found that to be true. You know, people will come up to me at a conference and start talking to me and they know so much about me because, right, you know, they've listened to all these shows and so they start asking about my dog Jamal and they ask about, you know, and I was like, wow, this is, it sort of reinforces to me that you really have to be careful about this and the kinds of things that are acceptable to talk about. And you know, you never talk about anything about your schedule. You can talk about events after they've happened, but you don't want to talk about where you're going to be and things like that. I think the thing that's different is, you know, a lot of times IT people are protecting from things coming in, and this is different because it's going out and they're not managing that as much. I came across a podcast. This has been a while back. This has been about maybe a year and a half ago, and I was so impressed with this school because they were because they were producing so many shows. And then it hit me, I'm like, there's no way that a teacher could listen to this many shows before they were posted. And clearly they hadn't. And so some of the students were, this was a high school group, and they were producing, they were trying to do kind of a daily show treatment of current events. And that's difficult to do because there are some lines that you come close to, but you don't cross. And they were crossing some cultural, racial sensitivity areas where it was really going to be embarrassing for that district. So I think it's really important that you do have some gatekeepers who are looking at the content of those shows and that students don't have the ability to actually publish themselves. It has to pass through some kind of editorial process.
You talk a little bit about that in the Podcasting Activity Strategies and Idea book. I'm wondering if you could just go into a little bit more detail about how that, I don't want to use the word filtering mechanism might work, but just that idea of having a gatekeeper to listen to it, even somebody beyond the teacher who's involved in that.
Right. It changes from school to school how people actually do that publishing. I've run across a lot of schools where even teachers don't have the ability to post to their server. So it's going to be, you know, like Gozar, the key master at the district level that has that ability. But I think before anything gets passed to them, the teacher should have some culpability. They should sign off and say, I've listened to this. This does fall within acceptable use within our district, and then handed off to the IT people. I think it could be even that simple that you just, you know, have it pass through the teacher and they have to sign off. But maybe you have to codify it within the district to say, when you pass this on, you're taking responsibility that it meets these, you know, content standards, that it has an instructional purpose, that this is the same kind of thing that you would publish in a print format, and I guess just to keep people thinking about what happens when you post it online, because it can take on a life of its own. Once people download it, you can't take it back.
I think what you're saying really does underscore the importance of teachers seeing this as partnerships between themselves and ITRTs and students, maybe parents and other administrators in the district. But I mean, I don't think you'd characterize that as being so overwhelming a thing that teachers shouldn't look at this as something that they could do.
Right. And it goes back to that sustainability, you know, looking at what you could effectively listen to and evaluate and monitor. So,
yeah, in fact, in my opinion, I believe that there should be more of that kind of interaction between different people in different departments and different parts of the community. I think that's we're really lacking that just in a broad general sense. And I think, you know, even if talking about and making these relationships and this involvement through podcasting is sort of an indirect way to kind of even minimally kind of improve that, I think that's important. It gets people talking, and it gets, you know, the stuff of education and the kids and the learning, you know, spread it out where it needs to be, and not, you know, not always so isolated and compartmentalized that I think it gets to be. I mean, that, like I said, that may be a little bit indirect, but I think that's good.
But I think I think you're right on. Anything that creates those opportunities for people to actually be a little less isolated and have those conversations, there's a secondary benefit that we may not have gotten from some types of communication before.
Well, and this, it seems like podcasting is something, it's not quite tangible, but it's something that you can point to and something that people can get excited about as those partnerships are happening also. So I think that's an added bonus too.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, Dan, sorry.
I was just going to say that the other thing that I suggest to people a lot, and this kind of gets back to the balance between technology and the content is developing a ratio that makes sense to you in terms of how much time do you spend on the content and how much time do you spend on production elements. And the ratio I always kind of point people toward is an 80-20 ratio. 80% of their time should be spent on developing an inquiry question, doing your research, organizing your ideas, analyzing, coming up with what you think you're seeing in your information and articulating your response. And then 20% of your time is actually creating the product that communicates that to your audience. Students, by their nature, you know, I guess they're just the way that they want to work with technology, they'll want to reverse those two ratios or those two numbers. They want to spend 80% of their time, you know, editing and finding cool music and putting things together.
We had talked a minute ago about just the practical side of things and the fact that you need a quiet place to record. And a lot of the feedback that we get from this show really has to do with teachers' concerns about having to learn new technologies in order to do some of these innovative things that we've been talking about. And I'm wondering, in your work at all of the different levels, how you might address that to teachers who are interested but not sure they'll be able to manage something like that.
Yeah, the first piece of advice that I give to districts that are starting to step toward this is if you have people on your staff that are, let's call them audiophiles, mm-hmm. that are really into stereo equipment and they love the microphone, different microphones, they got all this cool gear that they know how to work. Don't invite them to the meeting. because what teachers really want is that they want an application that has a red button,
right,
that when you push it, it records, and when you're finished, you can publish. And we're starting to get to a place where we're starting to see tools like that. I think the one that gets me the most excited right now is Apple's podcast capture and podcast producer.
You know, just to interrupt you quickly, I saw your post about that, and I didn't even realize that was hidden in the utilities folder.
Isn't that, it's sort of like, yeah, and it's not really that useful unless you have
the server.
that giant Xserve. But if that's something that your district can put in place, I think you could make amazing things happen because it really is so simple. I did a workshop with some faculty and we went through GarageBand and Audacity and we tried all these different things and they were actually okay with it. But you could sense this little undercurrent of, man, this is a lot of steps, mm-hmm. to get to posting what I want to say. And then at the end, I showed them podcast producer, and they were just like, oh my God, this is this is what it should be. You know, click and I can focus on my content. I don't really want to be an audio engineer. I really don't want to be a TV producer, but I have something to say, and let me get to it. So that's kind of cool. And then the workflows that come with that, I think, are nice. Now, if you don't have that, there are some other tools and I think some strategies that are worth exploring. I think GarageBand is really easy to use. Audacity is really easy to use. One of the things that I think is fun to explore is the use of cell phones as a mechanism to create podcasts.
As tools to record, you mean?
Yeah, there's a website called – actually, I think there's more than one. The one that I've always used is called GCast. So it's just GCAST.com. And they give you – they basically set you up with an account. It's a free service. And you can have as many different podcast channels as you want. And basically they give you a phone number to call. And you set up it uses caller ID to know that it's coming from your phone. If you don't call from that phone, you have to give them that phone number. And then there's a PIN number. So there's, you know, a couple of levels of punching in numbers to make the call. But it's essentially like leaving a voicemail. Mm-hmm. And within 5 minutes after you've left this message, automatically your message is added to the RSS feed and it's available. Wow. So people could do things remotely.
And that almost seems like a technology that's just naturally something approachable by students today.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. If cell phones aren't contraband.
Right, in the schools, of course. Uh-huh. But I mean, I think even about the possibility of students being able to do that, you know, with caution, of course, outside of school hours,
sure.
In essence as sort of field reporters or something.
Yeah. Or even school secretaries who are maybe podcasting the school announcements or the lunch menus or something in the morning. It's a very practical side of it, but it's another example of being able to get parents or people in their community information about what's going on in the school.
Well, that's interesting. So the secretary would do the announcements, and all the while she's pushing it up to GCast, and then a parent could just log on and hear the announcements, eh?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you could put a subscribe link right on the front page of your school's webpage, and in a click, they would be subscribed, and every day the announcements would automatically download. And so when the kids come home from school and you say, hey, well, what's happening in school? And they say, nothing. You still have a shot at it.
And that's really, I mean, I think that's really just the beauty of RSS and the idea of being able to subscribe.
Yeah.
Instead of having to go back to that site every day or having to check email for something.
Right.
And
huge.
And I think in some ways that may be why people are getting so excited about podcasting. It's not that they necessarily know and understand the technologies that underwrite them, but they do know that you can create these audio programs to which somebody can subscribe and download. And I don't know, it's that moment that I used to remember, like when you made your first mixtape and you realized you had published something. You know, to see it in iTunes, I think, is so exciting.
That's a great
Apple TV.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah, the Apple TV update came back this week finally. So I sent Michael a picture of our podcast up on our TV. It was just kind of half surreal, and I think it goes back to what you were talking about, Dan, which is that, you know, you realize that these things have legs, and
yeah,
they live for a while.
It's amazing too, because, you know, and for kids, that is really significant. Because I asked some of my students, this was about a month ago, I said, what percentage of the work that you have done has had an audience of basically you and your teacher? Mm-hmm. And they were saying, you know, like 95% of the stuff was, they were perceiving it as an academic exercise with a very limited audience. And so we started to talk about how would it be different for you if you knew that there was that if you knew there was a bigger audience out there, if you knew there were, let's say, 200 people who were going to listen to what you had to say. And it raised their level of concern quite a bit. And one of my friends, Sean Porter, who does the they call it the Forecast. They call their classroom Club Forth. They bought the domain clubforth.com. And they get more... When they publish a show, I think they get more downloads than people show up to their entire school's open house.
Wow.
So, and that could be on a regular basis. So thinking about those kids, you know, when they write something, you know, they get fan mail coming in, people asking questions. That's changing the way they perceive their writing and what they, you know, it seems to give them more purpose, more authenticity, and I think really more confidence in their, and meaning in the work that they're doing.
And meaning,
just one other quick anecdote. A friend of mine, Jean Halderson, who is in Wisconsin, she does the Cooley Kids podcast, or her kids produce the Cooley Kids podcast, I should say, and they're middle schoolers. And they were one of the first schools to kind of jump into this and really are kind of leaders in this whole movement. And they were asked, I think, by a New York Times reporter how they decide what they're going to tell people on their show. And one of her seventh graders said, "We don't tell, we teach."
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I was like, "Wow, you have a teaching mission in seventh grade," and I could barely find my way to school.
Well, it makes sense, though. I mean, you think you're not teaching your teacher something when you're handing something into him or her,
right?
But when you're speaking to an audience that you know exists and that you know is interacting with you in some ways, it becomes very different. Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, I know. Probably getting short on time, and I think that's a great place to end the conversation for now.
Steve, no, wait.
Did I miss something?
I have to ask Dan about his visit with Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I saw that too.
Do tell.
Wasn't that cool? I was so starstruck. Can I just say, I was at Macworld, and they had the John Lennon bus there. Uh-huh. And Richard Dreyfuss was on, the John Lennon bus, which is like a multimedia lab, and they had brought in students, and he was working with them on this kind of a curriculum piece about civics, and that's his new banner that he's waving about, you know, let's bring more civics back and civil political discussion back into schools. And so a friend of mine, Don Henderson, that works for Apple, he helps kind of coordinate some of the activities around that bus, and so I was like... Yeah, that would be really cool to me. So he was very gracious, and we talked just for a short time, but he definitely had a lot to say about this, and I thought it was really inspiring. And then right after that, I was walking away just sort of starstruck, and I was Twittering and text messaging to friends that I was bragging that I just met Richard Dreyfuss, who I was now calling my close personal friend.
and I
walked over to the lunch line, and as I was texting, I bumped into somebody, and I looked up, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, Sinbad.
Wow, really?
Within 5 minutes, I met Richard Dreyfuss and Sinbad. I was,
oh, dude.
You know, I love Sinbad stuff.
It's so good. Yeah. So good.
Well, that's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us, Dan.
You bet.
I do, like Mark said, I want to give a very serious plug to all three of your books, actually. I've got Podcasting Activities, Strategies, and Ideas, but you've also written KidCast, Podcasting in the Classroom, and GarageBand Mechanics. They're all available through your website, intelligenic.com.
Yep.
Pronouncing that correctly?
You are.
And we would love to have you back on the show at some future time.
Anytime. This is so cool. I just it's fun to talk to other people who are working to kind of get the word out to people and inspire people to look at technology in new and constructive ways. I think it's awesome what you guys are doing.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks, we will talk to you later then. Good luck with everything.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Bye.